Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
You're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. We are live at the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge on starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. And apologies, listener, I have a little bit of a hoarse throat, so you're going to hear this raspy voice today. And as always, we jump off each show of The Tidbit with a little tidbit of knowledge on what I've been reading, listening to, or learning. And this is derived from our bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate. In it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. Five quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So if you're interested, head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co, to sign up. So I have been reading this book called Farsighted, How We Make Decisions That Matter the Most by Steven Johnson. And there are times that I put it down because it seems a little common sense and dull to me, but then I keep reading and come across these very well articulated salient points that they almost seem like fate. It's like as if I was supposed to read this very thing in order to communicate a complex thought that I've had in my mind. So I'm going to read a passage from the book now that talks about group decision making. So some group members are cognitively central in the sense that their personal knowledge is also held by many other group members. And what the cognitively central members know, other people know as well. A cognitively central group member is thus defined as one who possesses information in common with all or most group members. And by contrast, other group members are cognitively peripheral. Their own information is uniquely held. What they know is known by no one else, and what they might know might be really important. And for that very reason, well-functioning groups need to take advantage of cognitively peripheral people. These people are especially significant. But in most groups, cognitively central people have a disproportionate influence in the discussion and participate more in group deliberations. And by contrast, cognitively peripheral people end up having little influence and participate less, often to the group's detriment. It's something about the bonding environment of a face-to-face meeting that seems to elicit this borderline unconscious response to humans in discussing elements that are commonly known to all members of the group, either because the individuals feel like they need to be in that consensus or because they worry about being perceived as some kind of outsider if they reveal information not shared by the other group members. This is fascinating to me because we have created this culture around groupthink, and we need to understand the importance of these diverse perspectives in a room. Who has the power to be at a table, to voice their experiences, and therefore create relationships amongst the group and all key stakeholders? This is really important. And what are these new ways in which we can build trust around the decision-making process, particularly around investment and how our money moves? This is what I'm really interested in. And why I'm really excited to talk with Allison Redpath today, who just launched Citrine Angels. Their mission is to support the growth and success of female-founded businesses in Washington, D.C., the Washington, D.C. metro area, and increase access to investment opportunities for women. And Allison, she herself was an investment banker for food and beverage companies for many years, raising capital, doing mergers and acquisitions advisory work, and she now works as a part-time fractional CFO for many companies in the DC area. So we're going to take a quick break and be right back with Allison to discuss all of the above.
Service Radio.
You're listening to The Tidbit. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. We are here with Allison Redpath, who recently launched an angel investment group for women to invest in female-founded companies. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Kim.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So before we dive into Citrine Angels, I would love our listeners to learn more about your background. You have a really important and unique perspective because you've been at this intersection of finance and food and investing for quite some time. So tell us more about your journey to this moment.
Sure. Well, I started with a business degree. Mm-hmm. And when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with it, I started out in investment research. Mm. My first job out of college was at Goldman Sachs. And so I learned a lot about the investment world doing that because we interacted a lot with the people on the trading floor who were trading the stocks, with clients that were buying and selling the stocks that we were reviewing, and also talking to companies and advising on investment banking deals. So it was a really good introduction to the business world.
Very intense, too.
Yes, very intense, exactly. And then later on, after I got my MBA, I went to work in a more transactional type environment in general investment banking, and started out as a generalist covering companies in a lot of different industries. Manufacturing, I mean, I did air brakes and mining and all kinds of things.
Whoa.
And then had a stroke of luck when I was invited to join the Starbucks team.
Interesting.
And started working on that. And I realized how amazing it was to be able to combine my business skills with my personal interest in food and beverage, and ended up specializing in food and beverage and worked with a whole host of companies in the sector and restaurants as well.
Wow. And in that time frame, what were you observing? Was this the beginning of the Starbucks big boom? Was it at the moment where they acquired Teavana? Like, what were you seeing at that moment in time?
It was pretty early on in their growth. I mean, they were already well established and on the West Coast, and you know, origin in Seattle, but were expanding into new markets. So, for example, they weren't in Philadelphia really at all. They hadn't entered Philadelphia. They were just starting to enter Boston. So they were raising a lot of money.
Dunkin' Donuts rivalry.
And so they were raising a lot of money. So, you know, to build up, because it was all company-owned stores, not franchised. And so we were raising money for them every year.
Wow, at that fascinating. Point. Mm-hmm. That is so interesting. So now you've gone through, you worked at these very large behemoth of companies. Then you were working with individual, you were in-house at any particular business, or you were always just advising them?
Yeah, I've always advised clients, mm-hmm. and you know, worked with a variety of different companies.
And that's what you're doing now.
And that's what I'm doing now. Yeah, I love it because I find it's really gratifying for me, because I find that I can make a significant difference in a short period of time, mm-hmm. when I go in and I can see the tangible results. And
absolutely.
At the same time, I get exposed to companies in a lot of different areas, and it's just really fun and exciting.
Absolutely. So I want to congratulate you on the launch of Citrine Angels. This is really amazing. And this month, it just happened. And so to reiterate to you, listener, Citrine Angels is a membership group providing early stage investment opportunities and education to female investors in the Washington, D.C. metro area. So how has the launch gone this month? Have you learned anything so far about this burgeoning female investor community?
Yeah, absolutely. We've learning a lot. The longer we talk to people, the more we learn. And in fact, before we got to this point, I spent many months talking to people who were accredited investors, women in particular, and going to a lot, you know, being involved in the early stage financing community and trying to understand the ecosystem and how things worked and where the white space was, really. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, I talked to a lot of different people who were accredited investors to figure out why women haven't been joining the existing angel groups, because most of them are 90-95% men.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up around here, so I know how many successful, accomplished women there are.
Yeah.
So I go to these events and I'm one of the only women. I'm like, wait, where is everybody?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And it just sort of popped into my head, like, is there some women-only group out there that I don't know about? And, you know, just started asking people. I said, And everybody said, yeah, there probably is one. This is DC, right? I mean, there's got to be one. I said, okay, great. Where? And no, there isn't, actually. Not in the way that I wanted, in the way that we're envisioning. So we're starting one, because I was very fortunate to meet, in the process of doing this, several other women who felt the same way that I did and wanted to get together and try and make this happen.
Oh my goodness, I am getting goosebumps, because anytime there's like a new systems thinking perspective in the room, I am very jazzed by it. So thank you for acknowledging that there was a huge gap, and there's clearly a solution, because there are so many incredible, powerful women in this DC metro area. So are there any key insights that you've sort of learned so far, maybe industries people are looking to invest in, or maybe more broadly, sort of these core values that people have been attracted to?
Well, what I did find from talking to people is that there are generally, I would consider, three categories of people who are potential investors, mm-hmm. and they have fairly different perspectives and attitudes about it. One is people who are already doing it. They're experienced investors, and when I talk to them about this idea, they get it right away.
Yes.
Now, unfortunately, this is a very small minority of all women, right? There's another group that seems sort of apprehensive versus like, well, I don't know, I already donate a lot of money. And I'm like, well, hang on, that's not what this is about. This mm-hmm. is about investments and investment returns. And in fact, there's a lot of data that shows that investing in female-founded companies is actually more profitable and has better returns than investing in male-founded companies. The consulting firm BCG did a study last summer, which is on our website, which actually has data to back this up. Now, the largest group, though, the majority of women seem to be very interested, like, mm-hmm. but don't know a lot about it.
Right.
Like, wait, what is angel investing? How does it work? What do you do? Why would you do it? So that's actually the group that we're targeting right now. We found that the experienced investors, they're coming with us. They get it.
They get it.
Now, but we're doing a number of things in our group that is different from some of the other groups out there because of this, to attract more people to grow the ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. I love this. So maybe you could provide just a definition around angel investing. So if our listener doesn't know what that term is or how they should be embracing angel investors in their lives, just provide some more color.
Yes. Well, I'll do this from a founder's perspective.
Yeah, perfect.
When a company is just starting out and it's an idea, or maybe it's the beginnings of a product, or it's one store, then that's generally considered to be pre-seed stage. Mm-hmm. And that's also known as the friends and family round, because it's usually not yet a proven business concept. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this is a good idea. It seems to be working, but we're not ready to scale nationally yet, right? So that is before angel investing. The next stage after that would be called the seed round. And that is generally when companies have already expanded a bit. People are doing it full time. It's not a side hustle. Mm-hmm. They actually have a whole team in place, and that could be in the form of a board of advisors or directors, or could be employees, but whatever, the marketing, operational, financial, all the expertise you need to run a big business in some way. But the only thing missing is money,
right,
to make it happen. And mm-hmm. that's where we would come in. The later stage after this, like once the business is starting to scale, it's really starting to reach the next level, that would be venture capital. Mm. So we're kind of in between friends and family and venture capital.
Really interesting. And especially in this ecosystem right now in the DC metro area, there have been really important launch pads for that, maybe a friends and family-esque type level of investment, because not everybody has friends or family that can provide funding to them. So I've been a part of Beacon DC and the Veneta Project that have really created these platforms for female founders to get access to that bridge capital that they might need before they're going after angel investment. And I think you've been a part of probably all of these circles as well.
Yes, actually, I was a mentor at Beacon, and also am very involved in Veneta, which is a fabulous organization. And they're actually having have a number of pitch competitions, which are a great venue for early stage entrepreneurs to get access to potential investors.
And I love the fact that you're approaching this not just from the female founder perspective, but actually the women who are deploying capital, right? Because we, as female founders, speaking from my own personal experience, I can only go after the money that's on the table, right? That I know that's out there. And I would like there to be more diverse perspectives, as I mentioned at the top of the show, more diverse perspectives and a more diverse experience of people who have the money in order to relate to them in a certain way. And that's not always the case. So I just commend you immensely for creating this space that allows for education and openness and trust building. So we are going to take a quick break and then we'll come right back with Allison and talk more about the nitty gritty. We are back with Allison Redpath. If you're just tuning in, Allison was an investment banker for food and beverage companies for many years, raising capital and doing mergers and acquisitions advisory work. And now she is a part-time fractional CFO for companies in the DC area. And on this episode, we're chatting about her newly launched project, Citrine Angels. So part of the ecosystem you're building includes education and access to resources surrounding investment. And we are all for that at Curate. So for me, importantly, it seems to me that a key component is trust building between investor and entrepreneur, which is quite remarkable. That is not something that I have found really exists right now. So I'm really interested in that psychology of money and how we hold being in relationship with others while growing a person's vision. So in building these relationships, I'm wondering what barriers to entry you've witnessed when entrepreneurs are seeking capital, and what are ways in which both parties can build trust or break trust?
Yes, that's an excellent topic, and a pretty broad-based topic, because that applies to business relationships in general, I think.
Totally.
Yeah. So in general, when I see people that are having difficulty accessing investors, I see it for a couple of different reasons. One is that some people, as you mentioned earlier, have the friends and family who either have money or are in the business. And, you know, some people are fortunate to have that, but frankly, most people don't, right? Mm-hmm. So they need to go out and go to events and try to meet people. And that's where social skills come in. You know, you really have to be able to communicate your ideas and do it in a way that people are interested in hearing about it and want to learn more. And that's really important. Mm-hmm. The third thing is to have some sort of track record or credential. And that could be a resume. It could be because someone's already worked in the industry where they're doing this startup. And they can say, you know, yes, I have some accomplishments and something to prove that I know what I'm doing. And, you know, it could be sometimes it's a degree, you know, especially in the sciences, you know, it's a master's or a PhD in whatever the relevant field is. But, you know, having the connection, either the connections, the social skills, or the resume credentials are really very helpful in order to break in.
Absolutely. And this is something that I have found in speaking with many entrepreneurs. It's not that you can even take a college class on how to operate in capitalist America. Like, there's nothing that says, like, you need to write emails this way, you need to present yourself in this way. There's no explicit course in this. It's a lot about showing up, being present in these networking spaces, taking cues, learning what resonates and doesn't resonate about your message, really building that arsenal of your social skills, because it is very adaptive and you have to understand who your target audience is and who that target individual is and what is also resonating with them. So it requires a lot of active listening too, I have found. It is a relationship after all.
Yes, absolutely. And to your question about trust and relationships, actually, I find that when in general, to build trust, being open and upfront about everything, including any problems or negatives, because, you know, people do think about it and they're wondering about it. So it's useful to just be open about things and volunteer information, as well as talking about your why. I mean, that comes to like, okay, what's your agenda? What's your motivation for doing this? What's your end game? Helps people understand you as a person. And, you know, let your personality show, right? Because there's anything that's a really terrific idea, there's no blueprint. If it's already been done, then why are you doing it, right?
Right.
So, you know, whatever makes you different, embrace it and go with it.
Yes, absolutely. And that diversity in perspective, that diversity, your unique value proposition as you as a human in relationship to you as the business is so important. Thank you for calling that out. What are ways in which people you've experienced have maybe broken trust before?
Well, when you're first starting to get to know someone, you're trying to assess, you know, what they're like and how they do business with just really little snippets of information, because you can't, it's kind of like seeing the tip of the iceberg, right? So you're trying to guess at what's beneath the surface. So the things that really are big red flags for me are hiding information or being evasive, because then you start to like wonder what's going on, you know. And there's been, you know, recent situation, I asked someone a direct question, it was in an email, and, you know, mentioned a few different things, and she replied and didn't answer the question. I kind of thought, all right, maybe that was an oversight. So I, you know, sent another email, asked the same question and mentioned a few other things. When she replied, she still didn't answer the question. I'm kind of like, okay, I don't know why that happened, but that's a big red flag, right?
Yes.
So it just, you know, I think sometimes people, when they're starting out, they maybe have some experience, you know, 5 or 10 years experience, they kind of know, they think they have to be clever or try to play people or try to do things in a certain way.
Right.
But the thing is, that doesn't work. And I think people that have been doing it a really long time realize that. And also, people that have been doing it a really long time, like, they've already seen it 100 times somewhere else. So, you know, just don't try to play games. Don't try and think like, I have to do this a certain way. Just talk to people.
Right.
Yeah.
Be yourself and be responsive, reliable.
Mm-hmm.
All of the traits you would want from a romantic partner or a business partner.
Yes.
Just be a person who is in relationship and is respectful of people's relationships. Thank you. That is such an important point to always hone in on. So I want to go now towards more of the, I like to leave people with a tangible snippet of information, a tidbit of information around the topic that we are discussing. So traditionally, we were just speaking about angel investing and seed stage. So initial seed stage investments, I again have found, are typically structured through convertible notes or a SAFE agreement. And a SAFE stands for Simple Agreement for Future Equity. So I would love if you could define what each of those entail, just briefly, and share maybe pros or cons to either route for an investor or an entrepreneur. I think a lot of our listeners are interested in seeking out angel investment and then don't always understand what comes next once they've received that money and what that structure could look like. So if you could provide some more color, that'd be amazing.
Sure. This is a pretty specific and advanced topic for people who are probably already familiar with early stage investing.
Yes.
Convertible notes are by far the most common, and that's a form of debt which is convertible to equity. But really, the easiest way to think about it is that it is equity, right? Effectively, I mean, unless something goes wrong. And that's usually at a predetermined dollar valuation. So you know ahead of time, and it's in the term sheet, that the company is worth the valuation is $3 million or $4 million or whatever the number is. And However, it's structured as debt because the investors would then have priority over straight equity in the case of a liquidation or a bankruptcy. So it's a bit of downside protection for the investors. And that's actually the best structure in most cases because it's very clear what it is and what the valuation is and what happens. And it's usually spelled out what happens if the company is acquired or if there's another round of financing, what happens. So there's a lot of things that are very clear.
So essentially, if I was getting a $100,000 convertible note, that would mean I am in debt to this person for $100,000, but it can transition for them to hold equity. But should I go out of business, it is more like a loan to be paid back.
Yes.
Yes.
By contrast, a safe is actually not debt. It is, it's generally, it converts into equity the next time the company does a round of financing. And you don't know what the valuation is. And it's like, well, why would you do that? That's generally done in cases where there's not enough information to negotiate a fixed dollar valuation that everybody can agree on. So what you do is you say, well, we're just going to punt this down the road. And the next time we do a value, you know, we have enough information, we do another round, we'll, you can convert into that, but at a discount. Well, you'll get a discount because you're getting in early, basically. Yes. And that is sometimes used in cases where there's a very long runway to an event that determines the valuation. Like, let's say you're working on a product that needs FDA approval. And so that takes a long time and it's very uncertain. But once you do have FDA approval or not, then it's going to be clear where you are. So that's a, can be a good solution in cases where there's a lot of uncertainty about the future in order to bridge the gap between what investors want, which is a low valuation to reflect the high risk of this situation, and what founders want, which is recognition about this future potential.
Yeah. That's so fascinating because it is such a game to determine what someone's value. I am going to rephrase that because it's not about the person, it is about the business. It is so complicated to determine a business's valuation so early on, because you have to get everyone in the room around the table to believe in that shared vision and that shared potential. So that's really fascinating, this safe agreement structure, because you don't have to say, my idea is worth $5 million at this moment in time. You can say, at the next round of when we are raising money, we can determine what the value is.
Yes. For a founder, that can mean a lot of uncertainty. Because you don't know how much of the company you're selling. Yeah. What if you're actually selling the whole company and you don't realize it, right?
Yeah, it's what if you get valued less than at that next round of financing? That is so interesting. Yeah, so listener, this is definitely a more advanced and complex topic, but I wanted to make sure you had these words and terms in your arsenal to do some more digging yourselves and do some due diligence if you are thinking about going after angel investment. You should know about these two different structures of the way in which you can receive money. And Allison, I'm wondering if you could...
One more thing the safe.
Please.
For people that are not currently raising capital, like, don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's like, it's complicated. It's not used very often. And, you know, kind of comes and goes. Sometimes it's, you know, so that's, unless it's in something immediate that you're concerned with, don't have to know that.
Yeah. Thank you. That is a really important point. So I'm wondering if you can give us a little sneak peek as to how you're envisioning your due diligence process to work at Citrine Angels. How do you envision someone coming into your pipeline?
Sure. Yeah, just to clarify, our group is a membership group, not a fund. So we don't make investment decisions for our members, and we don't control their decisions. They make their own investment decisions. Great. What we do is we facilitate the process by gathering information and processing it or compiling it and disseminating it to our members as best we can on a really basic level. We don't do all the due diligence. We just kind of help. And we are going to have a planning to have an MBA fellow who's going to be assisting with us.
Great.
And what we'll do is we'll have a predetermined information request so that, you know, if a company comes to pitch with us and we decide to proceed to due diligence, there's some standard things that we would want right away. So maybe in the first day or two. So, and this is the kind of information that any investor really would want. Things like, you know, detailed financial projections, references, things that may not be in your pitch, but are very helpful and important information.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, we would write a short due diligence report, just summarizing the information that we found and that we've received from the founder and disseminate to our group. We're going to have an internal portal mm-hmm. for members so that we can post announcements and have discussion forums and communicate among the members. And then we're going to encourage the members to decide fairly quickly, hopefully by the time of the next monthly meeting, we're going to have monthly meetings, what they want to do. You know, there may be some who will be faster than that, especially the more experienced people. And there may be some people that want to follow up and get more information on their own and have further discussions. But that's generally how we as a group envision being involved in the process.
Amazing. And I applaud you for creating a network of support around investing money, because it is, yeah, it's scary for the founder to ask for money, but it is also scary to give up your hard-earned money. So I'm just really pleased to hear that you've created this ecosystem and structure. So how can people find out more about you, about Citrine Angels online? What are all these touch points?
Yeah, well, our website is up. It's citrineangels.com. And we're just starting to put out information and, you know, on things like LinkedIn. And so you can follow Citrine Angels on LinkedIn or connect with me personally. I welcome that. And keep an eye out, because we're having two events at Startup Week, DC Startup Week in September, which have to do with angel investing, which I think would be very useful for someone who's interested in this topic. One is going to be with women angels and female founders talking about the ecosystem, and another one with representatives from a bunch of the different angel groups in the area to talk Amazing. About what everybody's doing and how we're similar and how we're different. So I think that'll be a great event.
Oh, absolutely. And when we get closer to September, you will be sure to find both of those events in our Tidbit newsletter. So another plug to sign up and get on that listserv. So we would love if more budding entrepreneurs and listeners like you could find out about the Tidbit. Our mission at Curate includes the sharing of education and access to resources, as mentioned. And the best way to reach more folks like you is to leave a review in iTunes. So I would be so appreciative if you could head over to your app, leave a little tidbit on there about what you've learned here today. And until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.